Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, sponsored by WebSpy. It's June 30th, 2009, and this is... Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, sponsored by WebSpy. It's June 30th, 2009, and this is episode 197. Just under a year ago, in episode 151 of this podcast, we looked at my Speedlight lighting, and I gave some tips on how to handle that gear with umbrellas and backdrops, etc. Today we're going to look at a simple way to light products to shoot only with ambient light. There's nothing really amazing or difficult about how I set these things up, and I'm sure there are lots of people with other ideas about the right way to do this sort of thing. But I personally find that most of the time this works for me, so I just thought that I'd share my simple setup with you today. Before we go on, I'd like to say a huge thanks to our sponsors, WebSpy, the internet monitoring, analysis and reporting specialists. If any of you would like to know more about WebSpy products and how they can help you to increase performance of your workforce or help to keep the students at your college or school from possibly damaging sites while allowing them the freedom to find what they need on the internet, take a look at the product demo videos or download the full working trial version of one of the WebSpy products from our landing page, which is webspy.com/MVP. If you decide that WebSpy is for you, then use the discount code MVPWSY or buy from the MVP landing page for a 10% discount on all products. Now let's jump into the main topic and talk about simple product shoots with ambient light. Actually, before we go on, just a quick note that I was the secret guest question answerer on Scott Bourne's Photo Focus podcast last week. I'll put a link to the actual blog post for the podcast in the show note, but you can find this and many incredible photography-related goodies at photofocus.com. You might recognize my voice on the Photo Focus podcast as well, because I actually do the intros and outros and a number of voiceovers throughout the podcast each week. I also wanted to say a big thank you to Scott for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure. So let's take a look at my simple ambient light studio setup. If you're listening to the enhanced podcast in iTunes or on an iPod, then a photograph of my setup should be displaying now. If you listen to the MP3 version, you can see the images in the audio file if your software supports it. But for everyone else, please take a look at the first image in the blog post for this at my blog site, which is basically just blog.martinbaileyphotography.com. I'll put a link to the post in the show notes. By the way, the full transcript for this week's podcast will also be in the blog post. So if you couldn't quite catch what I said, or my pronunciation is so bad that you don't understand me anyway, then you can check that out too. Literally though, this simple setup is, as you can probably see, my kitchen. As of June 2009, I do not have my own studio. If I did, it would be nice to have things set up all the time, or at least have a number of setups that I can rotate through easily. But like most of us, this isn't the case. I build my makeshift studio in the kitchen for most things like this, and I find that it works for me most, for most of what I have needed so far, it's worked pretty well for me. Let's talk through what we're looking at here with the reasoning behind it. First, note that the main light source is a large double window that goes right down to the floor to the right side of the frame in this shot. I have white lace curtains across the window that not only stops my neighbors from seeing my expensive camera gear, it also creates a much more diffused light for this sort of work. Actually, if we look at another image, which is number 2017, we can see a shot of my 14mm f2.8 lens And we can see there that if I shoot directly into this light and get pretty close to the curtains, you can actually see the pattern of the lace sometimes. This, of course, is not going to be a good thing if, say, you're shooting images that have to be perfect and accurate representations of the object or product, say for a catalog or something like that. I find, though, that if I move far enough away from the curtains, the pattern is not recognizable in the resulting images, but I do get that nice diffused look. The next thing to note is that I'm using a graduated paper backdrop as my background. This is a white to grey graduated paper from HCL, or Horiuchi Color is the name of the company. I'll put a link to Horiuchi Color's website in the show notes, but I don't know if their products are available outside of Japan, and they don't have an English version of their website either, from what I can tell, so it might be a bit of waste of time putting that in there, but I will do anyway. I have a number of these papers in various sizes. Many of these papers are actually waterproof, which is great, but they mark very easily with metal objects. If I put my camera down on them, for example, then, you know, say I have a really right stuff lens plate on the bottom of all of my cameras, and they'll leave a black mark on the paper. This is the same for pretty much anything metal. So these things aren't going to last a lifetime. Once the marks start to take up too much time hiding or cleaning up in the post-processing, then the only option really is going to be to buy a new one. They do give a really nice smooth background, though, and I do like these, you know, to use these papers. So despite that slight drawback, I'm going to continue to use them. You'll also see that I've taped the backdrop to the front of the table. This is with a non-reflective black tape, also from Horiuchi Color. I have a roll of black tape and a second roll of white tape, and I keep this handy with me whenever I'm shooting anything like this. Basically, it's a very strong tape, adhesively. It rips easily with the hand. But it's very strong adhesively, and it doesn't leave a mess when you peel it off. And also, because it's totally non-reflective, you can use it in the frame, say, behind an object or something to keep it in place, and it won't reflect your light source around. If it was a very shiny sort of tape, you could actually find that even if it's black, it could reflect your light source around and cause problems. But this stuff really doesn't do any of that. In fact, you know, looking at the image set up here again, the photo of the image set up, I just realized that the roll of black tape is sitting on the top of a cap. It's the cap for the tube that the backdrop is stored in. And that's actually there on the back part of the book that we can see in the image. I was photographing just a part of the book at this point and used the heavy roll of tape to hold it down. And I'd actually chosen the shiny cap. Going against what I just said, but, you know, in this situation, what I was doing was basically I wanted a little bit of light shining back into a macro shot that I was doing of the credits in the book. So, you know, it's slightly different use there. I mean, I was using it as like a big paperweight. But, you know, it really is good tape. I like to have a roll of this, like I say, both black and white, depending on what black backgrounds I'm using and things like that. The tape that I used here was black because it was handy, and if there was any chance that was actually going to be anywhere near the frame, I would have used white in this situation. I'd set this backdrop up and everything on the weekend to shoot tear sheets from the book that we can see here, which is something that I did a number of assignments in August 2008. And I posted these tear sheets, the resulting images from this shoot, in a blog post at the weekend. And I'll actually put a link to that in the show notes as well. I'm pretty proud of the book now it's all done. So, if you're interested, please do take a look at that as well. The backdrop is held in place by held up there by an impact telescopic collapsible reflector holder. And I rarely use this to hold a reflector. Usually I use this like this to hold up a backdrop. I actually have a much bigger stand as well, especially for backdrops, for the large cloth ones that I sometimes use. But when it's just the small paper ones, this works fine. I have it standing on a light stand, which is one of the stands that I usually use for my speed lights with umbrellas. I used to use a second tripod to hold this up before I got my light stands, and either will work fine, but a tripod, obviously, the legs start to sort of splay out, you know, they spread out much sooner, so you can find that they hit the backdrop if you have it sort of straight, and so light stands actually work better here, I think. To the left, you can see that I'm bouncing a lot of light back into the scene with a very large 41 by 74 inch oval reflector. This reflector is white on one side, as you can see here, but it's a beautiful mix of gold and silver on the other side. I find silver too harsh, you know, just silver too harsh, and gold too warm, but this mix of both is really nice in my opinion, making this a very versatile reflector. It's made by Impact as well, and collapsible of course, but there are no instructions on how to collapse a reflector of this size, and believe me, you need them. When I first got this huge reflector, I had to go online and find a video of someone doing this before I could learn how to collapse it down myself. You have to hold the front sides and then sort of, you know, bend it forwards as though you're going to do a big clap of the hands. And then while you're doing that, you have to use, you know, the spare foot that you're not standing on to sort of kick up the bottom edge of the reflector towards, you know, upwards into the folding action. And then, and only then, will this baby fold up for you. It takes literally seconds now, but when I first got it, it was a lot of fun trying to figure this out. Of course, the reason I have a reflector here is to reduce the harshness of the shadows to the left of the object that I was photographing. With the reflector, you still have shadows, but they're much softer, and you know you need some sort of shadow, I believe, I can't really say you need it, but I like to leave a shadow. Just because, you know, you can see sort of the direction that the light's coming then. It makes it look a little bit more natural. So unless your objective is not to totally remove them, then a reflector like this works pretty well, I think. While I'd got the makeshift studio set up, I shot some images of a few things that I use in, you know, in everyday photography and photography-related activities. And I'm going to be talking about those in a future podcast. But I wanted to look at one of these pictures to explain the benefits of using ambient light like this over, you know, strobe or the speed lights. The image is on the blog post as well, and it'll be on your iPod or a screen or your in iTunes now as well. You can see a flashlight here and see how we can actually see the flashlight on. We see the brightness of the beam inside the glass element there on the front of the flashlight, and we can see the light falling onto the pale grey background as well as hitting the dark flashlight case. Now, think about this a little bit and you'll realise that if I was using speed lights or studio lights, which I don't own, but, you know, say if I was, then, you know, as powerful as this little LED lens flashlight is, or LED lens, or I don't know how they say that. But as powerful it is, as it is, I'd have had problems enabling you to see the light coming out of the flashlight because it would have been drowned out by the light from the flashes. I could perhaps have balanced this out and got something, but with my setup as it was, you know, once I'd set up the studio, makeshift studio for my photography, then I just dropped the flashlight in there, put it into position, turned it on and shot away without even adjusting the exposure or anything. And it just worked. You know, no worries about trying to balance out things. You can see the lights on. It's very natural. I should also note that I included my YBAL, white balance card, in one of the earlier shots in this set so that I could, you know, just do one click in, well, two clicks actually, one to select the spoit thing, you know, the dropper, color picker, whatever we call it, and then another click on the white balance, the image in Lightroom to select the white balance, and then just sync that white balance across the whole set. And in literally a few seconds, I'd white balance the whole set of images. If you're actually shooting products for a catalog or something like that, then white balance becomes incredibly important, as you know, you have to provide accurately colored images or your client's more than likely not going to be very happy. So just something to remember as well, especially if you're using a light modifier, which I was here in the lace curtains. You know, although they look white, I'm sure they're not totally white. And when I did the white balance exercise, everything did definitely change. So the downside of shooting indoors with ambient light, of course, is that your exposures are going to need to be longer. And, you know, when I'm using the term ambient light here, remember that ambient light is just any available light. If I turn the lights on, then, you know, the electric lights on, that also would have been ambient light. But, you know, I'm really using it here to mean the light coming in from outside. And basically, you know, it means that your exposures are going to be longer. I shot most of these images at ISO 400 at f11 for 1/4 of a second. The smaller aperture was to make sure that I got everything sharp, because, you know, of this long exposure that I'd got, I did need to make sure that there was no movement in the subject. It was actually 30 degrees Celsius or 86 degrees Fahrenheit in my kitchen when I was doing this shoot. But I had to turn the fan that I had to my left off, because the wind was blowing the pages around a little bit. I'm saying that because of the movement of the pages, but I'd probably have turned it off anyway, even if I wasn't using a quarter of a second exposure, just because I want to freeze all of the movement. But you just have to be more careful when using longer exposures of this sort of thing. The final thing that I wanted to add about this sort of setup is that you have to be careful of the height at which you set the backdrop. There are two reasons for this. The first and most obvious is because you want to have your product positioned nicely somewhere on that gradation of the background. If indeed you are, you know, using a graduated background. The other thing, though, is that you also have to be conscious of where the reflection of the top of the paper comes. When I first set up the background, and I started to sort of look at the scene, look at the book that I was shooting through the camera, I quickly realized that the white line at the top of the graduated paper was reflecting in the glossy surface of the book. The image that we see here, actually, you know, this is on the one of the whole scene, and this doesn't really help to explain this again because there are reflections in the black pages. But this was because, you know, I was shooting just a part of the page. But also, you know, I'm looking at this whole scene from a totally different angle. You know, that's not the angle that I see in through the camera. So again, a little bit of a weird photograph to use maybe when I'm explaining this, but you do have to be careful of what, you know, where that, reflection falls, and just make sure that it doesn't hit your subject. And I mean, obviously, again, it's a rule to make to be broken. If that works, do it, but just something to keep in mind. And it's surprising how often people can go away and do a shoot like this and then not really realize that there's reflections in there until you get it onto the computer and look at it large, or even later when someone points it out to you. People tend to concentrate on the subject, and you know, that can be a little bit of a pain sometimes. So do be aware that you have to make sure that there's nothing reflecting in the product as you do your shoot. I've been using this sort of makeshift studio in the kitchen quite a lot recently. I shot a new self-portrait image with a similar thing, but this time within a very dark, a black background on the larger background stand that I mentioned earlier. And this was also using the diffuse light through the net curtains and the reflector, pretty much the same as we've seen today. But the totally black background also worked very well. And it's a little bit embarrassing, but if you're interested to see how that soft light and the shadows helped to make me look a hell of a lot better than I am in real life, then take a look at that post on the blog as well. And it's just the blog post is called "Lessons Learned from the Luxury of Self-Portrait." You know, and I just sort of gave a few sort of thoughts and, like I've said, musings on there. So, you know, it's another way that I'm sort of throwing information out these days. So if you're interested, take a look. I'll put a link into the show notes as well. So, as I said, no big secrets or surprises here, but I just thought that I'd share my setup for, you know, when I do this sort of photography in the hope that it helps in some way. If you don't have your Everything in Focus assignment shot uploaded to the mvpgalleries.com website yet, and if you listen to this podcast like the moment it's released, then you probably have about another 24 hours to upload it. I'll start the voting process on the 1st of July for 2 weeks to find out who is the closest to the theme in the eyes of your peers. And, you know, whether you participated in the assignment or not, please do come along to vote for these first 2 weeks in July. The shots uploaded so far are very high quality, as usual. And you can, of course, learn about photography just by viewing other people's images. So you will, you'll almost certainly gain something from this process as well. So before we finish, once again, I just wanted to say a quick thank you to sponsors WebSpy. To find out more about WebSpy products, visit webspy.com/MVP and use the discount code MVPWSY for a 10% discount on all purchases. For now, you just have a great week, whatever you do. Bye-bye. The Martin Bailey Photography Podcast is a proud member of the Photocast Network. Find this and other great photography podcasts at photocastnetwork.com.